From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We hear of the gender gaps in corporate boardrooms. Experts have plenty of explanations why women haven't reached the same heights as men. Discrimination is one, the old boys' network another, but a couple of professors say they have evidence that women are less competitive than men. And this lack of competitiveness is already evident in girls who've not yet finished grade school. This could have far-reaching implications for women in the workforce. Tonight on Point, gender, competition, and America's boardrooms. We begin, though, in New York. The nation's unemployment rate slipped from 6.4% to 6.2% last month. Earlier, I spoke to Wall Street Journal economics reporter John Hilsenbarth. I asked him for the story behind the numbers.
I wouldn't get too excited about that jobless rate coming down to 6.2%. It actually popped up to 6.4% a month earlier. And what you're seeing is just some unusual fluctuations, possibly being driven by teenagers moving in and out of the labor force. The real story is that the job market is still a real struggle for a lot of people. We like to look at a measure called payroll employment, which is how many jobs are actually being created by employers and businesses, and that number dropped again in July. In fact, the recession officially ended in November of 2001, and a million jobs have been eliminated since then. That hasn't changed, so it's still a real weak job market.
So job creation remains a real challenge for the administration.
People are expecting the economy to pick up in the second half of the year and with a bit stronger growth to see employment pick up with it. I mean, job creation it's a problem for everybody. It's not just a problem for the administration, although Bush's, election prospects hang importantly on that. But the Federal Reserve, the monetary officials, are also doing everything they can right now to try and get economic growth going a little bit stronger to create additional jobs. I don't think anyone expects gangbuster job growth anytime soon, though.
We've also got U.S. GDP figures, an increase at an annual rate of 2.4% in the second quarter of 2003.
Yeah, so there's some unusual cross currents going on right now. Yesterday, the news looked pretty good. We had GDP growth. Economists were expecting it to come in around 1.5%. Instead, it came in at 2.4%. It's clearly picked up from the beginning of the year and late last year. So you look at that on the surface and you say, oh, well, things are getting better. So why is the job market still worsening? Well, the story behind that is that the economy is growing faster, but it isn't growing fast enough. It needs to grow 3.5 to 4%, really, to create new jobs. So what we've got now is economy that's accelerating a little bit, but not enough to take the pain out of a lot of workers' lives. Now, the other thing with that GDP number, a lot of the increase in output in the second quarter came from defense spending. And when you take the defense spending out, the number looks a lot more anemic, less than 1%, actually. So a lot of that was tied to the war. Our defense budget is certainly a lot bigger than it was a year ago, but few people expect it to be sustained at the kind of levels we had in the second quarter.
And an extraordinary increase in defense spending, 44%.
Yeah, 44%. It was the largest quarterly increase that we had seen since the Korean War back in 1951. Now, the thing about that is that we're talking about statistics here, and they get kind of wiggly. It was kind of inexplicably, defense spending was down in the first quarter, according to these same statistics. If you average it out over the first half of the year, it was up over 20%. I guess that sounds reasonable, considering that we're going to war. But again, it isn't at all clear at this point that we're going to be sustaining defense spending at the same high levels. The defense contractors are doing really well right now. I mean, they're all reporting sales and earnings up pretty briskly. So there is a lot of defense spending still in the pipeline, but it's just not clear how much that's going to be able to sustain growth. Preferably we'd be producing something other than bombs in the next 6 months to keep the economy going.
So no real signs yet that the economy is on the rebound?
I wouldn't say that. GDP did pick up, and business investment is starting to pick up a little bit. Consumer spending is starting to pick up a little bit. We have a tidal wave of tax cuts coming through the economy in the next 6 months. So it does look like the economy is picking up some steam. The real critical question is it going to be growing fast enough to improve the labor market? That's really the big question that's still hanging out there. It has picked up. It has accelerated a little bit, but we're just not certain at this point that it's enough to get that unemployment rate down below 6%. Now it's at 6.2%.
John Helsenbarth covers the economy for The Wall Street Journal. He spoke to me from New York. In a study when 9 and 10-year-old children ran alone, the boys performed as well as the girls. When the boys and girls paired up to race, the boys' times improved, the girls' times did not. Co-author of the study, Aldo Rusticini, says that already at this age, males and females respond to competition differently. This doesn't mean that Martha Stewart and Hillary Clinton are not competitive, but it could mean that women in general do not perform as well as men in competitive environments. Do you, as women, shy away from competition? Will women always lose out against aggressive men? Are women wired to fail in the workplace? Join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And joining me now from Argentina is Aldo Rusticini, Professor of Economics at the University of Minnesota and co-author of Performance in Competitive Environments in the August issue of the Quarterly Journal of Economics. Good evening to you.
Good evening.
Why did you carry out this research? Did you suspect that women weren't as competitive when they were up against men?
Yeah, we did. Our motivation was the search for some additional explanation of why women are so much lagging behind men in the workplace and why this gap is being reduced at such a slow pace. So we looked at the explanations available. We find them convincing, but we found that they could not explain the whole gap and they could not explain why this gap was going down so slowly. So we looked for something else. We had anecdotal evidence that this was the case. We set up experiments to prove this in a controlled environment, and we ran two or three, and they all make the same basic point, that women seem to be less at ease in competitive environment than men.
And the boys and girls taking part in your tests didn't know what the reason was for it?
No, our subjects never know what the real reason of the experiment is. We provide motivations for them to do it, but they have no idea what we are trying to prove, of course.
So you ended up with the kind of results that you did, but do you have an explanation for them? Are women hardwired to be less competitive, or are they brought up to avoid competition?
That's the big question. That's the big open question as far as we are concerned. We first ran an experiment with 23 years old, and we found the result that women are less competitive. And so we asked the same questions that you asked, and the next step we could do was to check for children of younger age, and we looked for children of 9 and 10, and the result is really of the same nature, qualitative and quantitative. So this seems to provide support that at least for something that happens very early in the education, maybe socialization, maybe it's hardwired. We don't know that. To answer that specific question, I think we need the different methodology, which is something I am doing in a different field, which is neuroeconomics, studying the structure of the brain. But that's a very hard question. Certainly it happens very early. Now we think we know it happens between the age of 1 and 9, but probably much earlier. Evidence I have is anecdotal, is that already at 5, it seems to be something clearly in this direction.
Okay, joining me now from California is Lisa Barron, assistant professor at the Graduate School of Business at the University of California at Irvine. You've carried out research into salary negotiations, and your findings echo those of Aldo Rusticini's.
Hello, nice to be here. Well, Julian, I think in some ways my findings can be interpreted in a similar way, but I also have a different slant on them in that it appears that the men and women in my study perceived this negotiation differently. So the men in the study asked for more money than the women did. Both groups, however, argued that they deserved more money than they had been offered. And it looks like the beliefs that they had about the benefits of the salary negotiation differed.
But the women were prepared to settle for less.
The women both groups were given comparison information about what colleagues were receiving. And what ended up happening is that the women asked for the same amount as those colleagues, whereas the men asked for more than those colleagues. And that difference was statistically significant. So we interpret that as a meaningful difference. When I interviewed them about their behavior and about what had transpired, what I found was that they had different perspectives on what was required to prove themselves, with the men feeling that their past performance demonstrated that they deserved additional money, money over, above and beyond their colleagues, whereas the women felt that they needed to get in there and actually show that they could perform this job better than the people they would be working with, then they were entitled to more money than those people. So there was a different standard.
But the men were making out a case for them doing the job and being paid more for it before they even got it. They were being a lot more assertive.
They construed the situation differently. They read the rules differently. And in fact, many of the men told me that this was like a job performance, that they were actually being evaluated in this circumstance and that it was a chance for them to really shine, whereas no women made that argument.
Aldo Rusticini, I know that your research has been done with young boys and girls, but do you think that it has implications for women in the workforce?
Oh, yes. Our research has not only been done with young boys and girls, it has also been done with students, with university students of the same age, roughly as the group of that Lisa studied, 20 to 23. And the results are the same. I don't know if you have know this other experiment. I don't know if I can go into it, but the structure of the experiment was much closer to the one of the workplace. Subjects were paid according to their performance, the performance in solving simple tasks. And the basic find is that when they are paid for what they do, women and men performed roughly in the same way. When only the subject who performs the best is paid and is paid the whole amount, then male increase their performance by more than a third, and women are stuck at the previous level. So even when you phrase the experiment in terms that are very close to those of the work environment, the result is there. Actually, this was the first result we found. So yes, we think we do. And I've seen the piece of Lisa. I find it fascinating. I agree that there must be something deep going on in the way in which women and men conceive social relationship. And men look at it as an individual affair, an individual performance. Women look more at it as a social enterprise, as something cooperative.
Lisa Barron, this was very specific research into salary negotiations that you carried out.
Yes.
But also, Lisa, as an academic, as a teacher, anecdotally, do you find in your classes, among your colleagues, that women shy away from competition?
Well, from an anecdotal point of view, I would say no, that isn't what I find. An interesting point, for instance, in negotiation is that it involves competition and cooperation. And so it's the balance of those two things that really results in a beneficial negotiation for both parties most of the time. And what I find in my teaching with my students is that one of the things that's difficult is to get them to see both of those points of view. Often with MBA students, I find that they are very geared toward the competitive side. And trying to get them to balance those two things is the trick.
Lisa Barron, we must take a break. Lisa Barron, assistant professor at the Graduate School of Business at the University of California at Irvine. I'm also talking to Aldo Rusticini, professor of economics at the University of Minnesota. We're talking tonight about whether women are less competitive than men. Do Aldo Rusticini and Lisa Barron's studies ring true to you? Are you raising your daughters to be more aggressive? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is on point. This is On Point. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about whether women perform less well in competitive environments. Women, do you find that you must be confrontational to get ahead? What's it like to be a woman in a world where men hold most of the high-profile jobs? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking with Aldo Rusticini, Professor of Economics at the University of Minnesota and co-author of Performance in Competitive Environments in the August issue of the Quarterly Journal of Economics. Also with us is Lisa Barron, Assistant Professor at the University of California at Irvine's Graduate School of Business. And joining us from East Hampton, Massachusetts, is Barbara Reinhold, Director of Career and Executive Development at Smith College, where she's also an adjunct Associate Professor of Psychology. Barbara Reinhold, welcome to you.
Thank you so much.
As somebody who works with graduating seniors as well as executives, are you surprised at the findings that we've been talking about?
Well, actually, I am surprised at the analysis of the findings, and that I think in Professor Rusticini's research, for instance, the real issue there is not the girls but the boys. The fact that the girls did their best, ran well, whether they were running against girls, other girls or boys, is an important point. The fact that the boys did better, ran faster when they were competing against girls, I think is really critical, because it says to me that very early on, probably by around 18 months to 2 years, we have acculturated boys to think that the very worst thing that can happen to them is to be outshone by a girl. So that rather than this being about the girls, I think it's really about the boys. And as somebody who is currently right in the middle of a two-week program for high-powered executive women from Fortune 500 companies, I have talked about this every day this week, and we'll talk about it every day next week. What about the fact that men in organizations seem unable to bear the fact that they might be equaled by or bested by a female?
But either way, however you interpret the data, there is a need for women to be more assertive in the workplace.
Well, you see, I would see it two ways. I would see that we need to have both genders moving toward a midpoint between instrumentality, i.e. aggressiveness, competitiveness, and expressiveness or collaboration on the spectrum of kinds of behaviors. And that in a global economy where it's really about relating to people across different ethnicities, different national lines, different kinds of people, that the very strongest strategy is going to be that is assertive when it's time to be assertive, and collaborative and being a good listener when that's what needs to happen. And if you check Fast Company, Harvard Business Review, all the courses, we're teaching men to be better listeners and women to be more assertive. But in reality, I believe that there is an equal amount of remediation required on both sides.
Well, let's go back to Aldo Rusticini and offer him that interpretation of his research from Barbara Reinhold. It demonstrates not that women are more submissive, but that men are too aggressive.
Well, first, men are also aggressive to men. In single group competition, they also respond more aggressively. We don't know yet exactly what happens when women are by themselves. They seem to be more competitive when they are in mixed group. So we think that the real issue here is the competition, how women feel in a competition in a mixed environment. Of men and women. They seem to be competitive when they are by themselves. The first study seems to show this. So we don't think that women lack competitiveness. It's really how they relate to the to men. Let me quote another fact. We asked women and men to choose the level of difficulty that they felt more comfortable about on a task that seems unrelated to any skill, choosing the level of difficulty of solving a maze. And men consistently chose a level of difficulty which was higher than women. This seems to be more inspired by self-confidence than competition. So there is some problem here the way in which women react to a competitive environment. Now, I agree that we have to be careful in our use of competition, but by and large, we seem to have decided to organize our society in a market, in a market economy, and the trademark of a market economy is competition. So unless we decide to drastically change this, we suggest that we have to be much more careful in the way in which we evaluate the result of competition. We cannot certainly drop it.
Lisa Barron, what do you make of Barbara Reinhold's analysis?
I think actually it's an excellent point. While certainly competition is an important factor between firms and within a firm that's organized hierarchically, there are other factors that CEOs and top executives have to keep in mind, such as building teams, making deals, managing people, fostering relationships. No CEO can run an organization without accomplishing those things. And if someone is too competitive, they can get a reputation in the firm for not being cooperative. People won't work with them, and that can lead to disaster for both them and the firm. So I do think that there is a balance that's required in order to be successful in organizations.
Let's take a call from Josie from Needham in Massachusetts. Josie, what would you like to say?
Hi, this is a great topic. I find this very interesting, and thank you for taking my call. I've been in the male-dominated fields just about all my life, and I've certainly recognized differences in approach as far as what women tend to do, what women are expected to do, and beyond that, if they go beyond that, the kind of reaction that they get from the people around them. As I said, being in mostly male-dominated fields, I was in telecommunications, and I'm now in broadcasting. And it seems like when I went to broadcasting school that women tended to hold back in the classrooms or in the hands-on kind of environments if there were men in the room. They kind of let the guys sort of take over because the guys kind of push their way in, and the women are like, well, all right, whatever, do what you got to do, and I'll do it later. They tend to be, again, this is just from my own witnessing, women tend to, with other women, they tend to be more cooperative. But if there's guys in a room, they tend to hold back. Does that make any sense?
It does, yeah. But are you basically arguing that the problem is one of too much male aggression or too much female submissiveness?
I don't know if it's so much a problem. I think it's what we're trained to do. I think also part of it is guys tend to, and this is coming from an instructor standpoint, men with other women in the classroom, they tend to do a lot more posturing. I don't know if they're trying to impress the girls or what, but it seemed like they posture a lot more when there's women in the room. They tend to relax a little more when women are not around. They do compete against each other, but I sense it's a little different. There's a little more of the chest and the shoulders that come up when there are women in the room than when there are not. And women tend to not so much change their approach as to, hey, you know, I don't need to do this to prove anything to you. Go ahead and do it.
I think you're absolutely, if I can inject,
yeah,
I think you're absolutely right there. As I was saying before, and I'm in the middle of running a two-week program for very highly ranked executives, all female, at the Smith Executive Education Program. And the one thing they say about our program is that it is such a blessed relief to be able to share what they know and learn without having to worry about posturing, that it just never happens to them in the corporate world. And I think there's so much wasted time and energy around figuring out what this male posturing is all about, taking care of their egos, and then getting on with making something happen. That if we could, and in fact, this kind of Western individualism is often the death knell to deals and good collaborations in a global intergenerational kind of negotiation. So my hope is that women will, in fact, continue to be
to be more assertive, to value their strengths, so on and so forth, but that both genders would learn what it is that the other has to offer, because I think there are business situations in which our results are being compromised by the control and command and the top-down and the posturing that comes primarily from a male-normed, almost militaristic approach to management.
But Barbara Reinhold, you clearly don't hold the view then that there is a strong genetic component to this, that it is something that can be overcome by socializing, by training.
Yes and no. I think that behavior really is the result of three different inputs. The physiology, there's no doubt that there are hormonal differences, for instance, one's temperament, and then the third leg is socialization. So I think it can be changed. I think men can learn to listen better, and I think when women can learn to be less self-effacing, and I'm not trying to argue that that most women don't need to learn that. I think they do, and we spend a whole lot of time, both at the undergraduate level at Smith and with executives at Smith Executive Education, getting this point across. I think there's hope for both men and women to reach the middle of the spectrum, instructing each other rather than competing with each other.
Let's take another call from Eva. She's calling from Providence, Rhode Island. Eva, what did you want to say?
Well, thank you for taking my call, first of all. And I can truly appreciate this argument because it's something that I've been dealing with for well over two decades. As a small business owner, we definitely face competition. And there are three women in my studio. And what I find is that we have been competitive and we have won, but what I find in our studio and with our clients, we don't base our business on competition. We base it on cooperation. And there are many new societal and community models that are being founded now on the female model of cooperation. And I'm sorry to say female, but it seems like that's, I feel like we're predisposed to be more cooperative than men.
Aldo Ristuccini, let's go back to you, because an awful lot of what we're hearing here seems to be, well, not blowing away your research, but somewhat undermining it.
Oh, I don't think so. But what can I say? If I say so, then I am a male. I would like to introduce a distinction which seems to be important. Actually, I think we are agreeing that women tend to be less at ease with competition. We don't disagree. The next step is what we do about it. And here I think we have to clarify something. When we decide what to do about it, we have two things that we can change. One is the character and the personality of the people, and the other one is the institutions that we have. So we can try to make women more competitive. That probably would be a disaster. Or we can try to make male less competitive. I don't know how this could be more successful. I think it's more important to look at the institutions that we have. By institution, I mean the way in which we select the personnel, in which we reward the personnel, in which we organize the legal structure of our companies, and keep this insight into account. Probably men and women look at competition differently, so we have to anticipate this fact. So if we are selecting personnel on the basis of a test, we have to understand that since women are less at ease in competitive environment, we are probably selecting the personnel in the wrong way. So we should adjust for this, and we get probably much better results without necessarily trying to change the mind of people.
Lisa Barron, I suppose there is a danger here that if these sort of ideas catch hold, that women are indeed less competitive than men in the workplace, it could be exploited to the disadvantage of women.
Well, that's certainly true. And I think one thing is that women do need to recognize when a situation is competitive and they need to be competitive, which might be a difference between the experiments that Aldo has been talking about and what happens in a workplace, is that women and men can choose to be competitive in certain situations when they need to be. And one of the things that I do in working with women regarding salary negotiation is to teach them how to effectively be be competitive in that situation because initial salary negotiations are so important. I think another point here that needs to be brought in is what kinds of consequences women face in organizations for being competitive in the same way that men do. They are violating stereotypical norms about how they're supposed to behave, and sometimes there can be negative, extremely negative social consequences for that. So they may win the battle, but be socially castigated in some way for that behavior. So one of the things going along with Aldo's point is to broaden organizations and allow people to behave in a variety of ways that make them more effective.
Barbara Reinhold, consequences. One thinks famously of the former British Prime Minister Margaret Thatcher, who actually had voice training to lower her voice to be more at ease, more impressive in a male-dominated society.
I would agree with whatever kind of strategic adjustments women choose to make to be more effective. We spend lots of time with our executive women talking about things like that, to manage the perceptions of others. And that makes sense to me. The feminist majority in 1991 said it was going to take 435 years to reach gender equity and pay in terms of pay and responsibility. I'm an optimist. I think it's not going to take that long. I do think it'll take another 15 or 20 years at the rate we're going, and that's all right. But I also agree with Aldo, actually, that the models that institutions develop for competence are critically important here. And that as we get more and more global, going back to the old global theme, in our outreach and our approach, I believe the rugged Western individualism will not be the tone that prevails over the long haul. But in the shorter run, I think that women need to accommodate to go as far as they can go without selling out, and that men should be accommodating as well to different kinds of models.
As far as they can without selling out, Barbara Reinhold, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think that the notion, we talk a lot about business alignment. Are your marketing goals in alignment with the mission of your business? I think that there's a question of personal alignment as well. Are the ways in which you're being asked to behave and perform and comport yourself in alignment with your values and your sense of your own mission in the world? And it's not a secret that women are leaving corporations in droves and going off to start small businesses at twice the rate of success as men, because they're finding that they're able to be truer to themselves in their own organizations. And I think that's the price we pay for asking women to adjust to a model that doesn't always agree with their own personal mission.
Barbara Reinhold, we must take a break. Barbara Reinhold, Director of Career and Executive Development at Smith College. Also speaking to Aldo Rusticini, Professor of Economics at the University of Minnesota, and Lisa Barron, Assistant Professor of the University of California at Irvine's Graduate School of Business. We're discussing whether women are less competitive than men, and if so, what this means for the future of our workforce. You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're discussing whether women are less competitive than men. This is On Point. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. Do you see your female colleagues backing down when the stakes get high? Is your daughter backing down in playground quarrels? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're talking with Aldo Rusticini, Professor of Economics at the University of Minnesota and co-author of Performance in Competitive Environments in the August issue of the Quarterly Journal of Economics. Also with us is Lisa Barron, Assistant Professor at the University of California at Irvine's Graduate School of Business. And joining us from East Hampton, Massachusetts, is Barbara Reinhold, Director of Career and Executive Development at Smith College, where she's also an Adjunct Associate Professor of Psychology. And let's take a call from Ken from Boston, Massachusetts. Ken, good evening.
Good evening. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask your panelists if they thought maybe this has something to do with societal norms that are placed on women and the difficulties of solving them. And I'm thinking specifically in terms of women that get involved in politics that that have young children. They oftentimes struggle because when they appeal to voters, if they appeal as being aggressive and tough, voters will view them as being a bad mother. And conversely, if they show themselves to be a good mother and very nurturing and caring, that can have adverse effects on their ability to be tough when viewed by the voters. So I'm just wondering if that carries over in the workplace environment too, and do women struggle when they go into these type of negotiations because of these expectations that are placed on them? And just as a side note, I would add that as a father of two young girls, my daughter consistently outruns the boys on the soccer field, so hopefully things are getting better.
Thanks for that, Ken. Lisa Barron, could I put that to you?
Sure. Ken, thanks for your call, and I was a soccer player also. I definitely think that these do transfer to the business environment, and I see these same things in salary negotiation. And one of the things that I work with women on is how to ask for more money and ask for things that they want and deserve while also maintaining a rapport with the recruiter and not getting stereotyped in a negative way. So one of the things that women can do, and this works equally well for men, is to be objective about the things that they're bringing to the organization, about their accomplishments, and speak in terms of kind of factual accomplishments, things that they've actually done, rather than kind of empty statements that might seem like bragging or seem overly aggressive. The other thing that women can do is maintain a communal sense by using inclusive kinds of language, which I actually use for men and women, things like what can we do about this? What can we do to increase the salary? Or how can we deal with this problem, rather than what can you do, which is a more aggressive stance. The other thing that I talk with women about is talking about their worth or the value that they're bringing in terms of the skills, experience, education, and accomplishments that they're bringing rather than themselves. So it's a way of depersonalizing it that I find is comfortable for a lot of women, and also kind of using objective information, which makes them appear less aggressive. And I find that that's very effective for both men and women, actually.
And Barbara Reinhold, your advice?
Well, actually, I would say that gender norms are as destructive or even more destructive for males than for females. As the mother of two sons and one daughter, I think my daughter has a wider range of behaviors open to her than my two sons do. I think that even though a woman can be viewed as too aggressive, bad mother, I think that that the man who cries, who evinces strong emotion in a reasonable situation, compromises himself as much or more so than the woman. Look at Ed Muskie. Ed Muskie lost the Democratic nomination back in the 70s because he cried when somebody offended his wife. I think the larger issue here is that gender right or gender appropriate assumptions about both men and women are deeply flawed, and that people of both genders ought to be able to be who they are and to let that be okay in the workplace.
Aldo Rusticini, if I could return to you. We've been hearing a lot about the way in which stereotypical behavior by boys and girls doesn't necessarily have to work itself out in the workplace, that it is possible to do away with these gender assumptions. Would you agree?
Oh, yes. I would also point out that when we suggested the differences in the attitude to competition, we didn't want to forget other explanations that of the gender gap and other factors that explain the gender gap that are at least as powerful. For instance, there are many studies that show that there is overt or covert discrimination, and that's the, I don't want to be naive about this. I think this is a very important factor, and I will be more optimistic in saying we can accept the fact that women are less competitive than men if I am convinced that in the long run the play field is really level and the competition is fair. I am willing to accept that if the competition has as a good test in the long run, if I think that this is fair. So in the study of Lisa, I saw women that basically were saying, I will prove my worth in the job rather than in words here in this interview. And I think their point of view is right. If the competition is fair, if it is not, then the basic assumption of these women is wrong, but it's not their fault. So we have to keep the eyes very wide open on the other sides of the of this problem. Once we do that, I think then we can be more open and more more flexible in the way in which we deal with competition.
Barbara Reinhold, how long is it going to take, do you think, for women to catch up with men in corporate America? I'm not suggesting that they're not holding their own at the moment, but to see more CEOs.
Well, I think they're at a place in the pipeline at the vice president level now. I think in 15 to 20 years that the playing field may indeed be much more level, particularly as we realize more and more that the dimensions of leadership are different now, excuse me, than they were even 10 years ago, certainly 20 years ago. So I'm fairly optimistic. I really am. And as the mother of a 30-something son, he certainly relates to his wife very differently than his father and I ever related to each other, and their friends are very similar. I think we're making huge strides. I really do. So I would say 20 years at the outside.
Lisa Barron?
I think Barbara's making some excellent points, and I see in my students definite differences, with fathers much more interested in being with their children and making a higher prioritization of that. So I think that we are moving in the right direction.
But, I mean, that very sense of a woman at work at some stage or other wanting to maybe leave and have a family, do you think that gives her less of a competitive edge? Lisa Barron?
Realistically, I think that that may still be happening. Should that be happening? I'm not sure that that's warranted at all. A woman does not lose her skills because she stops out of the workforce and comes back to it. I might even argue that she gains some skills in managing a household and managing a family and raising children, some of which might be useful in a management situation. But realistically, I think that that is an issue that women do still face.
Could I make a comment there? I did a research piece in the early 90s with 400 women from Smith and Mount Holyoke colleges, asking them, among many other things, the degree to which their parenting had had a positive impact on their careers. And 90% of them said that they were better managers because they had been moms, and that they wished most of the men and women who reported to them had been parents, had taken their parenting very seriously as well, because it would have impacted positively on their ability to coach and nurture and grow others.
Barbara Reinhold, many thanks. I've been speaking to Barbara Reinhold, Director of Career and Executive Development at Smith College, to Lisa Barron, thanks to you, Assistant Professor at the University of California at Irvine's Graduate School of Business, and to Aldo Rustuccini, Professor of Economics at the University of Minnesota and co-author of Performance in Competitive Environments in the August issue of the Quarterly Journal of Economics. Many thanks, all three of you, for being with us tonight. Continue the conversation online. Go to onpointradio.org and click on forums. In a moment, a radio postcard from Beirut. This is On Point. Despite all the recent attention accorded Iraq and its neighbors Syria, Iran and Saudi Arabia, one formerly tumultuous Middle East nation has slipped below the radar, Lebanon. Arab-American medical student Rima Arno is spending her summer in Beirut. In this radio postcard, she paints a picture of Lebanon as a modern and Western-leaning nation, a far cry from the images of violence and bombed-out buildings that dominated the Lebanese landscape for three decades.
Apparently, Beirut was once the Paris of the Middle East. But yesterday, the driver of my taxi, or service, thought it's more like a mini California. Sandwiched between the surf and the mountains, Cali shares Lebanon's climate and grows the same fruit. I agreed with his point and added a few more to myself. Beirut's social mores are considered laid back compared to the rest of the Arab world. It has clubs and boutiques, a number of women who claim to be natural blondes, an electricity shortage, and the potential for earthquakes, political ones at least. My first visit to Beirut in 1991 showed me a bombed-out, post-war Lebanon that couldn't have been more different from the clean, stable Basra I hail from. In visits since, public garbage cans, traffic lights, and traffic signs went up, and I got used to the fact that people don't often use them. Checkpoints and gun-toting soldiers are fewer now, and I am more comfortable passing them on the street. Israel finally left the south in 2000, and the scars of war appear less visible as the country and I have changed. But as the tectonic plate separating my American self and Lebanon inched closer, the tensions that still plagued the country were pushed underground, like molten lava that could erupt if it resurfaces. For example, although it has been rebuilding, Lebanon has racked up a $34 billion debt and still can't provide electricity and water 24/7. Also, Lebanon's factional tensions remain. As an American Muslim, the Adhan and church bells I can find mingling in downtown Beirut seem a model of tolerance and modernity, especially after the post-September 11th backlash against Arabs and Muslims back home. But it confounds me to be always aware that the story of Lebanon is exactly opposite of what that chorus of bells mixed with the call to prayer suggests. This paradox can exist because, upon introduction to a stranger, one's religious and political loyalties can be artfully triangulated from one's name, the Beirut neighborhood he inhabits, and his family's hometown. And if the two strangers don't match, conversation is still friendly, but more often than not sticks to work or the summer humidity. Most Lebanese simply aren't ready to talk about the war, afraid that the minute they do, unresolved disputes will spill forth. Enter America's war on terror. Student visa issue. Bush's invasion of Iraq and its implications for the region. It's clear that Lebanon's factions are still tied to outside powers, which comprise a who's who of Washington's bad list. Syria, seen by some as a stabilizing force and by all as an encroachment, still runs Lebanon's foreign policy and uses its presence as a bargaining chip in both its and Lebanon's continuing land dispute with Israel. Meanwhile, America still identifies Lebanon-based Hezbollah as a terrorist organization, one that has ties with Iran, no less. Then there's the Bush administration's escalating rhetoric against Syria and Iran this month, which everyone in Beirut has heard. But American politicians seem not to be mentioning Lebanon, although I can't imagine they've forgotten America's experience as a peacekeeper here as they now turn to Iraq. I also can't imagine a new action against Syria or Iran that won't create turbulence here. A professor friend at the American University of Beirut said that if not for a partial economic bailout earlier this year, the Iraqi invasion would have already been enough of a political shock to have shaken Lebanon's stability. The U.S. seems bent on reforming the Arab world as a whole, with concepts like terror and repression, or nations like Iran and Syria, as the next target. I just wonder whether the tools used to bring about such reform will be sophisticated enough to influence those targets without bringing the Western-thinking, recovering, but politically fragile Lebanon I've seen down with them.
Rima Arno is an Arab-American medical student who hails from Boston, Massachusetts. She's spending her summer in Beirut, Lebanon. Listeners, what struck you during your summer travels? If you have a story that would make a good radio diary, email us. The address is onpoint@wbur.org. I'm Julian Marshall, sitting in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Support for this program comes from Sophos Antivirus, protecting...